Welcome to Jazz Therapy, where we explore the intersectionality of jazz, the psyche and psychoanalytic thought, spirituality, and consciousness. I'm your host, Jesse Shapiro. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Episode 1, Season 2 of Jazz Therapy. I am just absolutely delighted to be back here. All right, well, let's get to today's episode, which is entitled The Monkey Mind, Keeping Inner Peace, and the Genius of Ahmad Jamal. The monkey mind really is a concept that resonated with me. Now, many of you probably know this term. It's associated with Buddhism, and it is often used to refer to the way that our minds are just, and our thought patterns are kind of really all over the place, like a monkey jumping from tree to tree. This can cause us a lot of suffering, and it really does affect us. And I think for me, I've really realized in a deeper way how, I mean, I knew this, but I'm just like knowing it at a deeper level. There's one thing to have kind of an intellectual knowledge, and then there's another deeply embodied sense of like, wow, this is really my reality. And that is, my mind is so obsessive. If there's something that I'm worried or concerned about, I'll just like worry about it like a hamster on a treadmill. If I worry that I said the wrong thing to someone or that I offended them. And sometimes I can even just get caught up in fantasies, which can keep me from being present. I do want to distinguish this from the state of reverie, which is a psychoanalytic concept that refers to the daydreams that we can sometimes have. Now, I'm not pathologizing this per se. I think this is different than kind of more of the obsessive thinking that I'm talking about here. And even when things are going well, you know, I still can watch my mind almost like looking for something else to kind of latch onto or grasp and like obsessively think about. And I knew this for a long time. And yet sometimes I feel like even just the last couple of weeks at a deeper level, I really see this pattern a lot more clearly. And so I thought, okay, I'm struggling with my monkey mind. This would be a great topic to talk about. And I bet others have their own struggles with their monkey minds too, just because you're a human being. And I could just see how this obsessing that I do, ruminating, it really does rob me of my joy. And I want to get back to being in a state of peace as much as possible, flowing with the Tao and being in harmony with all that is. Now, in some research for today, there was a 2010 study published in the Journal of Science, and the study was entitled A Wandering Mind is an Unhappy Mind. And so the title is really pretty self-explanatory. And basically, the study really found that when our minds are preoccupied and obsessing or ruminating, the default mode network of the brain is engaged. And this obviously causes us suffering. However, this article does point out that meditation is the cure, can really help us to find peace. And that neuroscience really backs this up, that the default mode network is actually somewhat repressed in terms of activity when we are meditating. And I think that's really important just to bring in the scientific piece as well. The term monkey mind or mind monkey originally originates from Chinese Xinyuan or the Sino-Japanese Xinyin, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this literally means heart-mind monkey. And this was first kind of documented in the later Qin Dynasty, 384 to 417 Common Era, through the Song Dynasty, 960 to 1279 Common Era. So this concept has been around for thousands of years. It's very fascinating to think about that people have been reflecting and tracking the contents of their mind for a very long time. Also, in doing research for today, I came across this website, and I will put a link in the description box. And I found a kind of review or little synopsis of this book called Wisdom and Compassion, Starting with Yourself by Lama Tsomo. Once upon a time, there was a disciple, and he was given a monkey by his master. Now, the monkey went to the disciple and said, "What can I do for you?" So then the disciple begins to give the monkey a number of tasks to do, like cleaning the house, cooking food, chopping wood, all of the quotidian things that we do in life every day. And as soon as the monkey would complete a task, he would return to the disciple and ask, "What do you want me to do next?" And the monkey was so productive and just incessant in his work. Even in the middle of the night, when the disciple was trying to sleep, the monkey would come back to the disciple and say, "What more can I do?" So finally, the disciple was just desperate to get some rest and a break. And he goes back to his master and he says, "Well, what can I do? I never get any rest." The master then takes a curly hair and says, "Give this hair to the monkey and ask him to make it straight." So the man then takes the hair to the monkey, who pulls the hair to get it straight, and then immediately it bounces back. Now the monkey is sort of perpetually occupied with trying to get this hair straight, and the disciple finally feels a sense of relief because he's no longer incessantly asking for a task to do. Lama Somo points out and says, this is the essential nature of the monkey mind. And I love this story that she writes about. So here are some of the ways that we can work with our monkey minds. Number one, meditation, as is also backed up by science, that sitting in meditation with a mantra, without a mantra, just really whatever calls you, something that quiets the mind, is wonderful. Also, yoga nidra, which I will do. I think I'll do a podcast episode about that. I personally am a big fan of yoga nidra. It's non-physical yoga where one lays on the floor and listens to a guided meditation, and it gets the brain into deeply restorative states of rest. And the task is to lay and keep the body in a state of physical relaxation while being able to follow along with the prompts. Using a mantra. Okay, so this is one that I am really working with right now. And I use this really in the moment. And I am finding that using the mantra when I recognize that I'm hooked, that my mind is like obsessing, really does kind of help me to come back to the present moment. And then number three, breathing. I was talking to my spiritual teacher about just this realization, even at a deeper level, of just how neurotic and obsessive I am. And she told me something very simple, which is to just breathe in deeply and exhale as another form of working with the grip of the monkey mind. So as you're listening to this, I'm really curious about, what are you all doing to work with your monkey minds? I bet you guys have some really neat tips and tricks that I would love to hear. So write a comment, just leave an email or something, and let me know, like, what are things you do to work with your minds when you recognize your mind has sort of taken over? So let us do a little meditation here. That's also part of this show. I would like us to just sit for a couple moments of silence, a couple minutes. Maybe we'll do like 2 or 3 minutes. And I'm just going to kind of say my mantra silently on the in-breath and on the exhale. And I'd like to invite you just to do the same. You might have a mantra you're already working with. You could also just use something very simple like, "I am peace," "I am love." Really whatever resonates with you. It could even be one word. It's just to kind of get us in the right space of peace and calm to get our therapy part next, which is the jazz. Okay, so I'm just going to get comfortable here. I'm going to set a little timer for us over here, so the timer can go off and I will know when we will be done. Do it for 3 minutes. And also, if you're driving or walking or something, you could just skip ahead to the jazz part, because I'm really excited about that. However, if you do have a couple minutes and you're in a seated position or place where you can just be for a moment, please do join us. And I just want to say, dedicating this little mini meditation to everyone and all sentient beings, everyone who has an unquiet mind, may all of us find peace and harmony and be at one with the Tao. All right, let us start our mantra meditation here. Well, I really did need that. And even as I was sitting there reciting my mantra, I saw more thoughts just come in. And I just came back to my mantra. And sometimes that's just what we have to do. So I will keep working to manage my monkey mind. And please do let me know what you do to manage your own monkey mind. Now it's time to listen to some jazz. Due to copyright laws, we cannot play the music on air at this time. I will leave links to the songs we listen to so you can pause and listen to the songs along with us. Now today we are going to talk about one of the greatest pianists in jazz, I think, Ahmad Jamal. Ahmad Jamal, born Frederick Russell Jones, July 2nd, 1930, and he lived until April 16, 2023, was an American jazz pianist, composer, band leader, and educator. For six decades, he was one of the most successful small group leaders in jazz. He was a National Endowment for the Arts, NEA, Jazz Master, and won a Lifetime Achievement Award for his contributions to music history. I had heard of Ahmad Jamal the first time, I think only a couple years ago, and I was completely astounded when I heard him play. And I could not believe that I had been so long steeped in jazz and somehow I did not know who he was or just the genius of his music. And the first album that I heard by him was the legendary OK and Epic recordings, which were recorded between 1951 and 1955. And the level of beauty, brilliance, just fresh innovation. It just, even now talking about it, I just get goosebumps. Kind of the way I normally do it is I will just kind of ask the universe, like kind of pray, what is it that I should do? Really, what needs to come through for this episode? And it really feels like it's not even, I'm not really even the one that is choosing. Kind of, I just try to be open and then the ideas just come to me. And so I knew I wanted to do something today about the monkey mind, since I said I'm definitely struggling managing my own. And then normally I use the jazz birthdays calendar, which has anniversaries of all of the jazz greats on there to kind of help me choose an artist. And since we're in October, I was thinking, okay, I'll choose someone who has an October birthday. However, when I thought about what artist I wanted to do for today, Ahmad Jamal came to me. His birthday anniversary is actually in July, as I mentioned earlier. And we were on summer break from jazz therapy at this time. And so then I thought, okay, well, I will just choose Jamal for this episode. And then later, as I really got into reading about his life and immersing myself more in his sound and just the essence of who he was, which is what I do for every artist, it really made sense to me why his name came to me, especially for this episode, because in his playing, it is like there is an essential truth and peace in his music that is communicated. It's almost like a transmission. And as I learn more about him, I realize unconsciously his music really brings me this sense of kind of feeling in harmony with the universe. And it really is, I think, a transmission of his consciousness to the listener. This is what comes through him. He's communicating like an interior state that he embodies. So Ahmad Jamal was born in Pittsburgh. And this is a quote from him. And this is from a 2019 interview that SF Jazz did with Ahmad Jamal. And so this is Ahmad's words. "Pittsburgh is second to none. I came up in a high school, George Westinghouse High School, where Errol Garner and Dodo Marmarosa also went to school, and so did Mary Lou Williams. Isn't that something? Billy Strayhorn was from my neighborhood, and there was a little tap dancer known as Gene Kelly who lived nearby. Maybe you've heard of him. And then there was Mary Cardwell Dawson, my teacher, who started the first African-American opera company. You see, we had an array of talent coming out of Pittsburgh, starting with Earl Hines. But don't you forget about Art Blakey, and later there was George Benson, Stanley Turrentine, and his brother Tommy. It goes on and on. I can't finish the list. That's where I got all my stuff from. We also had Mr. Johnny Costa, the pianist who was on nationwide television all those years with Mr. Rogers. Johnny never left Pittsburgh. He was, what a phenomenal talent. So Ahmad Jamal was raised in a Baptist home. And later when he was in the Detroit area in the late 40s and then like early 50s, he became interested in Islam and he converted in 1950. And he decided to change his name when he converted. And he told the New York Times, and this is a direct quote, from Wikipedia, he says Muslim prayers five times a day and arises in time to say his first prayers at 5 a.m. He says them in Arabic in keeping with the Muslim tradition. This is what he told the New York Times. I also learned that his name, Ahmad Jamal, means highly praised beauty. And this is from a really cool website. It's a great jazz resource. It's Ahsan Koshbak's Notes on Jazz. I will put a link to this blog in the description blocks as well. Now, another thing I learned about Ahmad Jamal is that he does not refer to jazz as jazz. He prefers the term American classical music. So here's another quote from Ahmad Jamal. Quote, "That's another thing about Pittsburgh. We didn't have that separation of church and state. You had to study Beethoven and Bach, Duke Ellington and Art Tatum. You had to study both worlds, the European classical as well as the American classical music, which some people call jazz." So this is very interesting in terms of how he is conceptually holding what jazz is and just that his early education was so steeped in these two worlds. Another quote from Ahmad, he said, "I was playing Franz Liszt in competition when I was 10 years old, but I was also playing Duke Ellington." So Franz Liszt, of course, was a classical composer. And from what I know of his compositions, they are incredibly technically difficult for the pianist. So this was just kind of steeped in him, you know, when he was very young. And then going on just a little bit, and this is from another interview he did in 2011 from JoeAltermanMusic.com. And again, I can put a link in the description box. And here's a quote from him. "Music chose me. I didn't choose it. And I was working as a sideman at 10 years old. I worked with groups around Pittsburgh for many years. I worked on the road with the song and dance team. So I had a history of being a sideman. I work with George Hudson's orchestra. He made me leave my happy home in 1948. I left at 17 years old and worked all over the country with him. Out of that band came Clark Terry and the great writer Ernie Wilkins. I was a sideman for many, many years. When I was young, that was part of my growing up years. I was an old man by the time I was 18. Laughter. I went from young to old very quick. He had a kind of intense drive to play the piano. He got all of this exposure. And then that is quite young to just kind of go on tour and leave, you know, family life to really be exposed to the world. And this was sort of part of his evolution. Now, I had always read that Miles Davis was very inspired by Ahmad Jamal, especially so on Kind of Blue, and that he wanted his piano players to really play like Ahmad. Now, Miles Davis ended up hiring Red Garland for his first great quintet. And I did a podcast episode on the relationship between Miles Davis and Red Garland and just functioning in groups. And that is in season one. And I just adore Red Garland. He's amazing. And I read that Miles had chosen Red Garland because Red's playing reminded him of Ahmad Jamal. And so I had always wondered why Ahmad and Miles did not work together. Like, why did Miles not try to get Ahmad to play for his quintet? And Ahmad Jamal was asked about this in another interview. And this is what he said, "Because he was leading and I was leading. That never happened. There was some attempt to get Miles and Cannonball and myself on record together, but that never reached fruition." Cannonball Adderley on Ahmad Jamal. "He seems to always be at peace. He still doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do, and he doesn't follow trends." And he was also speaking to just Ahmad Jamal's ability to kind of keep himself in a peaceful state of mind when he was successful, when he wasn't successful. And again, this is a very desirable spiritual state to be in, right? That we want to be equanimous and calm and in flow, regardless of kind of whatever is happening, whether we're up or we're down, kind of in the external world. This is from a third interview I found with Ahmad Jamal from February 2020 on a website called Capital Bop. Ahmad Jamal said this: "You have to love yourself first to transmit to others." And he says, "The thing is, we're just receiving vessels. And if you're in tune with your surroundings, we're fortunate enough to maybe contribute something to this world. I try to be in tune so I can make some meaningful contribution, first of all, to myself and maybe to others." And so then he is asked, how does one get in tune? So this is his answer. You have to pray. You must have a constant discourse with the Creator. I don't impose my philosophy on anyone. I'm just telling people my opinion. If you don't have a spiritual anchor, you got a problem. The two most important things in life, spiritual anchor and good health. Without those two, you can forget the money and the trappings of the world. Money is not the key to peace. It certainly helps, but it's not the key. Without good health and a spiritual anchor, you've got problems because you're going to do the wrong thing with the money. Don't take my word for it. Just look at people with money. That is so deep and beautiful. And I think because of the way he was able to find inner peace, and I wish I could have found more about his own spiritual practice and what he did, he was able to convey and transmit that in the music. Let us go hear the music of Ahmad Jamal. So if you're listening along with us, pause right here and then pop over to YouTube and listen to the concert. And I'm going to listen to it in the entirety. It's about 34 minutes. And then I'll kind of talk about what feelings and thoughts came up and listen along with us so that you can kind of do the same. Wow. I just need to sit with what an incredible performance I just saw. And again, everyone, I'm completely bowled over by this performance. So Ahmad Jamal was on the piano, Jamil Suleiman was on the bass, and Frank Gant was on the drums. And wow, both of them were incredible. There was so much range of what these musicians were covering, and I felt like they were communicating with one another when they would go into their respective solos. We heard three pieces: Bogota by Richard Evans, a Richard Evans composition, Manhattan Reflections, which is one of Ahmad's own compositions, and then Effendi, which is by McCoy Tyner. And I believe that was the last one that we heard. The last piece we heard, I loved how there was such a dialogue between the bass, the drums, and the piano. And it felt like a little bit like there was tension building, and yet whenever we would return to the piano, Ahmad would kind of take the original melody and then, but do something a little bit different with it. And it was like there was just kind of more and more and more that came. And then sometimes there would be the little interlude melody, and I felt so intrigued. I felt so like a sense of order and aliveness at the same time, if that makes any sense. So listening to this, what did you feel? Just what did you feel? What did you notice? Peace is not the right word. It's like there's like some kind of order. And I also just felt like this, kind of like this joy, like coming through the music And it was so wonderful to see Ahmad play. And he was also giving nonverbal directions to his trio, his ensemble. That's the term that he prefers. And I also read that he's known for this, and this is his classical training coming into play here, that in a way he, as the leader of the ensemble, he is kind of like the conductor, which is really cool. And I found this quote on YouTube that I wanted to share. This was a comment that a reader left at Mindful Meditations 01 on another concert he did. I believe this was from the concert live in Olympia, Paris from 2012. And here's this quote from this YouTube poster. "He was a dear friend of my mother who I was privileged to meet and see live on a few occasions. Truly one of the most astoundingly skilled musicians I've ever witnessed. The communication on stage between Ahmad Jamal and the musicians he played with was supernatural. The absolutely true and pure love that flowed from the piano out to the audiences I was a part of flowed out and over and around us with an harmonic embrace of warmth and taste and care and so much more. He treated his friendship with my mom in the same way. He was simply the embodiment of the divine music he created. There are no real words to explain. I have never encountered another musician who exuded the magic of this genius and kind, gracious, amazing soul." And I think that really articulates it much better than I could. Like, I could just feel like the life force flowing out of Ahmad Jamal. And I feel so peaceful, grounded, hopeful, reverent, like all at the same time. And just kind of surprised because the melody, like what he would do, would switch it up. This was just beautiful. What categories would I put these songs into? Let me think on that for a minute. The last song I would put into the category of emotional reverie and emotional galvanization and emotional innovation. The first piece, that definitely felt like emotional innovation. I felt like there's a lot of improvising. He was just kind of going out, coming back, exploring. It was really wonderful. And Patricio, who's my editor, I am dying to know what you thought of this. This was okay, padre, no, like this was amazing. Because since you're a pianist too, you have to tell me what you think of this piece later. Absolutely lovely. And finally, another quote from a YouTube member who commented on the concert that we just saw. And this is from at David Pay 49. And he says, as a quote, "In December 1969, as a 20-year-old bassist under contract to his company, AJP Records, at the Record Plant Studio in New York City, I had the privilege of sitting on a piano bench next to Ahmad and, at my request, listening to and watching him play. He had the longest fingers I had ever seen. What a thrill. He was a kind and gentle person." And I wanted to just include these quotes because they're just very telling of Ahmad Jamal and who he was. And people will be brutally honest when they're leaving comments on YouTube. I have seen people really just, you know, write with complete candor. So just what a supremely elegant and beautiful person Ahmad Jamal was. And I mean that elegance, using it not so much in the sense of being stylish and lovely, which he was, and also just what a very handsome and lovely man he was physically. The elegance, though, comes from the transmission of his soul, the sense of peace, the grace that he had, the way he treated people, the spiritual radiance, really, that he embodied. I think that's really what makes someone truly elegant. So we will stop here for today. I said this was, I was trying to keep it at a half an hour, and I definitely went over for this first one. However, I'm really going to cut down on the next ones. So thank you so much for being with me here today. I hope that this was helpful to you. It was definitely helpful to me in terms of talking about and reflecting more on my monkey mind and reaffirming my commitment to managing it. And just, it was so fascinating and wonderful and fulfilling to just do this deep dive into the work of Ahmad Jamal. So I will see you guys back for the next episode, episode 2. May jazz therapy soothe your soul. Thank you for listening, reflecting, and being present with us today. Please leave us a review and comment. Jazz Therapy is edited and produced by Patricio Garcia. Sage Salmon is our social media coordinator. To connect with us, find us on Instagram and TikTok. Our email is info@jazztherapy.com. Check back next week for our next episode. May jazz therapy soothe your soul.